Okay, I'm gonna call a special meeting of Town Discovery Bay to order. Roll call, please.
President Pease.
Here.
Vice President Lee.
Here.
Director Graves.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Steele is absent.
Hey, what's up?
Okay, I'm gonna open it up to public comments. Seeing there's no public here today, we'll close public comments. We're gonna move into a closed session and turn it over to legal.
Thank you. The Town Discovery Bay Board of Directors will now be adjourning into closed session per items D1, D2, and D3 posted on the agenda.
For the record.
Okay, we were in closed session. We're returning back into open session. I'll turn it over to legal.
So the Town Discovery Bay Board of Directors is temporarily adjourning the special meeting and the closed session item as all items were not completed, so they will reconvene after the close of the regular meeting.
Okay, at this point, we're gonna bring the regular meeting of Town Discovery Bay to order. Roll call, please.
President Pease.
Here.
Vice President Lee.
Here.
Director Graves.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Steele.
Here.
Would you join directly the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, at this particular point in the meeting, it's called the public comments. The public can speak to us on anything that is not on our agenda. We do have a 3-minute time limit. The lights will come on, and if you're still talking and turning red, I'm gonna have to ask you to finish. So is there any public comments? Okay, we have one volunteer.
Absolutely. How are you?
Good.
Greg Fulton. Just noticing that we have not had our CHP representative here for the last 3 months. And without him here, he cannot report back to his superiors to discuss our issues out here with traffic enforcement. Is there something that the board is doing in communication with CHP so that, to emphasize the fact that we need traffic enforcement out here?
We haven't heard of that CHP to help on that. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's how they test the water. That's how Donnie told me that they test the water. But if he's not here, how are they testing the water?
We'll ask staff to reach out and see if he can be here for sure the next week.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other public comment?
Yeah, hi, Terry Mahaney. I live on Discovery Bay Boulevard. And I haven't seen any improvement whatsoever in the speed. As a matter of fact, it's getting worse rather than getting better since the CHP is not out here. I can't attest to any other streets. All I can is Discovery Bay Boulevard. I don't work, so I'm out there all the time, and it's just getting terrible. And on this Nextdoor website, we have everybody's complaining about it, but nobody's here to squawk about it. And they seem to think that the sheriffs are responsible for handing out tickets. That they don't realize that it's a CHP. So either we have to get the CHP out here, or we have to do something with the sheriffs to maybe get them trained in radar, to get them to write a few tickets out here, to make the locals aware that, yeah, they do write tickets. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comments? Well, seeing none, I'll close public comments and go into area agencies. Sheriff's Office, please.
Derek Hobbs, I'm the Sheriff's East County Patrol Commander. First of all,
back there in the back of the room, that's Deputy Matt Ingersoll. He's your new resident deputy.
Oh, good.
Dave Elaine is no longer the resident deputy. He went to Los Vaqueros. So we'll be out here. As far as the speeding goes, that is the primary responsibility of the CHP. And, you know, we come here every month, and that seems to be all that we hear about is speeding. So I put together a list of equipment and training that I thought we could use to help the CHP out. So myself and Supervisor Pifo went to the sheriff and requested that he purchase this equipment, and he agreed. So I'm in the process of purchasing a radar trailer that'll be exclusively used in Discovery Bay. It'll be moved all over Discovery Bay every day. The two resident deputy vehicles are going to have mounted radar in them, and they're going to have handheld LIDARs in them. And I've already set them up for radar and LIDAR school. So be careful what you wish for. They're going to be out there writing tickets. They're going to be out there writing tickets. So that's coming. So in a couple of months, I hope to not come here and get complaints that my deputies are writing tickets.
Good job.
You may.
No, they don't. They go to the general fund.
Straight to general fund, yes.
So Tony will now give the report.
Thank you very much for that assistance. Thank you.
There you go. Good news, huh?
Yes, yeah. It is.
See, that's the whole point of showing up at the meetings and letting us know. And sorry about the slowness, but it's counting, so we take our time to do it right. Calls for service last month, we had 413 with these 53 reports that were taken. The thing that I see is the property crimes have tripled. We've been getting hit at night, people going through the streets, walking up the cars, checking locks and doors, and finding them unlocked, and taking items out of the cars. I think I skimmed over about four police out of the 12 property crimes. I think four of them were the big work trucks with the boxes in the back. Some of them, no forced entry, but they were open and tools and stuff were taken out. Looking at some of the reports, we're looking at a time frame anywhere between midnight, 2-3 in the morning. So people are walking the streets through Discovery Bay. So we just need people to start, be vigilant, give us a call if you see something suspicious, and let our guys do their job. So, any questions for you guys?
No.
No, thanks, Tony.
To pass along to Sheriff Livingston, we really appreciate the assistance.
Absolutely.
And that's what we'll do. We'll do what we can.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
It's Mayor, Supervisor Pifo's office.
Hi, good evening, everybody. I wanted to start off by thanking Director Steele for attending the Byron Family Park groundbreaking event last Friday in Byron. It was a fabulous event. The park will be amazing when it's complete, and it will benefit both or all communities. So we're really looking forward to having that hopefully be completed next year. But Director Steele, he represented the CSD and he spoke, so we appreciated it a lot. The second thing I wanted to remind you this evening is the Discovery Bay P6 Advisory Council meeting is next Wednesday. It's 6:00 and it's in the room right down this hall. So if you walk in and it's empty here, don't think it's been canceled. The P6 Advisory Committee, it goes over the sheriffs, what they do, and their funds that they have. So if you want input on that, if you want to know what's going on, that meeting will help. And then lastly, as crazy as it sounds, the holiday season is among us. And we generally have a holiday open house at our office. This year, we're actually having a holiday community farewell for Supervisor Pifo. It will be Wednesday, December 7th. It will be from 4 to 7. So I know there's a meeting that evening, but hopefully you'll all be able to come earlier to say, you know, your well wishes, goodbye, thank you for her 12 years of service. But it should be a really great event to kick off the holidays. So any questions for me? Okay, thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Thank you. Okay. Next, we'll move into a presentation of Assemblymember Jim Frazier, please.
Good evening, and thank you for having me tonight. And now that I'm a resident of Discovery Bay, as of last Saturday, California Highway Patrol is my security detail. And so I'll be calling Commander Seaman tomorrow and asking him to share with the Contra Costa Sheriff's Department increased enforcement going forward. As the chairman of the Transportation Committee in California, I oversee the Highway Patrol's budget.
Fantastic news.
That being said, I think you will be having complaints with several people with tickets.
Yes.
So thank you for the opportunity to share some of the legislative activities in Sacramento that have occurred over the last year. And thank you for allowing me the opportunity to serve you in Sacramento and in this district. This is the best job I've ever had. It's my honor to work for you and with you. I value your partnership and hope that we have many years in the future to work together on our important issues for our shared constituency. Speaking of which, as your new neighbor, I'm glad that the Highway 4 corridor widening project is completed, and now that Balfour has started utility relocations, we should be able to get started on that project and get that thing fixed also in the next 18 months, I would say. It'll mirror Sand Creek. It'll have two lanes. We won't have the funnel going down to the overpass, so it'll be a really good process going forward. It'll help a lot on that bottleneck. And I'm proud of the $50 million I was able to bring from the 160 connector to the to the Antioch Bridge. We call it Mary's father, Nedgely Bridge. And it was a $50 million project that was done in about 18 months. But look what it did for people coming off the bridge, not having to make a U-turn at Hillcrest or go through the city of Oakland. So having worked on that project since my time on Transplan and CCTA, now in the Assembly, the $1.3 billion on the project of Highway 4 and $236 million in state funds created more than 12,000 jobs and employed 40 local businesses. I know we share a commitment to serve the community, so I was proud to co-host a CHP car seat inspection at Discovery Bay Elementary 2 weeks ago to help keep our kids safe. One of the nice things about it with the CHP, when they do come out, if you have an uncertified or a child that's over the capacity for that car seat, they will give you a brand new car seat at no cost. I also appreciated your support to hold a senior scam stopper here, right here at the community center, and was very well attended. So transportation, as I mentioned, I'm the transportation chair. The issue that I've been putting my heart and soul into is a way to fund transportation infrastructure needs. I have learned so much over the last year about the overwhelming needs for our entire state, and having traveled the last 2 years from San Diego to above Reading, there is a disparate need everywhere I go. And over the past year, I've worked with my colleagues, local communities, and industry experts to develop an all-inclusive plan that makes necessary improvements to our transportation system. These conversations resulted in ABX 126. The package that Senator Jim Bell and I put forth provides vital tools to ensure California remains economically competitive. Not only do we need to maintain the roads for our well-being, but our economy absolutely relies on freight. And if we keep beating our roads to death, these people will go elsewhere to do business. So it's an investment, like an investment in your home on maintenance. So by strengthening our trade corridors and accelerating the movement of goods, this proposal keeps business in California while at the same time creates jobs through the advancement of crucial road maintenance and enhancement projects. California has 58,000 lane miles of highway, 13,000 bridges and culverts and on-ramps and off-ramps to support their highway system. That's a huge undertaking. We keep building infrastructure, but we've never actually created an endowment to continue to support what we've built. So the joint proposal that I've done it with Senator Bell provides an additional $7.4 billion annually across California's transportation system for highways, local streets, transit, bikes, and pedestrians. One of the components of the bill actually is a repayment of loans that the state used the motor vehicle account to balance the budget back in the recession. And it totals now about $800 million. And in our bill, it's going to be paid back over a two-year period to all local cities and counties so that they can actually improve their pavement indexes going forward. It's kind of like the Tiger or ARA that we used to see from the federal government, but this will be our own stimulus because of the repayment of these loans. This portfolio approach to addressing a multitude of funding needs ensures that everyone who benefits from California's transportation infrastructure contributes to its continual maintenance and improvement. And the bill is loaded with reforms. After the 4 years that I've been in the legislature, Caltrans can use some reforms. And we put them in the bill to make sure. The type of reforms we need to see regularly in all of our government spending. And the reason we're working so hard for this transportation funding is straightforward. In a nutshell, the purchasing power of our gas tax is lower than it has ever been since it was enacted in the 1920s. In the last 3 years, we have lost 12 cents a gallon in revenue due to the Board of Equalization called the true-up or the swap, resulting in $2 billion a year taken away from California's roads. So we're not paying as much, but we're not getting as much. At that rate, the California Transportation Commission deprogrammed $1.5 billion in projects over the next 5 years due to lack of revenue. With that, clean engine and clean fuel standard means the cars are getting more miles to the gallon than ever, and as the mileage rate doubles, the revenue from our gas tax is simply cut in half. Plain and simple. The governor estimates on average each of us spend about $700 a year on car repairs due to our failed infrastructure. That's not true. I just spent $1,500 on a hood and a windshield that a truck kicked up a rock out of a pothole. So I guess I'm double the standard, but again, if those potholes weren't there, I wouldn't be spending the money. So I need your help. I need you to please write a letter of support, send a letter to the editor or op-ed to our local newspapers, and let's make transportation funding a priority this year. Something that, if we don't fix it now, pavement is not like some of the other things we're used to about deferred maintenance. It has a real rapid decline, and it's just like falling off a cliff. So if we don't fund our transportation going forward, you tell me which roads you want me to turn back to gravel. Because that's what's going to happen. We won't even have money to patch them. So let me tell you a little bit about the 2015-2016 legislative session. So this session was the most productive session in decades. We covered topics ranging from wages and labor standards to health care, environmental protection, public safety, infrastructure, and investment. And we've had California's fifth straight-on-time balanced budget. And I'm proud to say that this year's state budget prioritizes working families, expands early child care, boosts K-12 spending, and builds the state's rainy day reserve to a total of $6.7 billion. The budget also includes $688 million for critical maintenance of levees, state parks, universities, community colleges, prisons, state hospitals, and an additional $270 million in lease bond authority for local jail facilities. So when people come to me up in the Capitol and say they have this ask or this need, basically I tell them, where do you want me to take it from? We have a finite amount of resources, and we have to be able to spread it out throughout the state. And unless we can create new revenue and any other opportunities, I mean, we're underfunding Medi-Cal right now. We don't have doctors that won't even see Medi-Cal patients anymore at this point in time. So we're looking for opportunities to save money and be more resourceful. So some of the bills that I've passed or had passed or worked on, AB 2107, Interstate Freight Registration, was a pilot program. It streamlines processes for freight companies coming into California so the registrations are done over the internet and they can actually not have to stop working and go into the DMV. So this is really good for helping our trucking industry. One I'm very, very proud of, AB 2371, our Special Olympics tax checkoff bill. I'm very proud of this bill because it creates a tax checkoff for taxpayers to voluntarily donate money to support the Special Olympics of Southern California and Northern California. I've volunteered at the Special Olympics for the last 12 years, and we've absolutely been constrained on how many athletes we can help during the year. They work all year hard to be able to make the Olympics, and then some are turned away because we just don't have the money or the capacity to have them here in Northern California at Davis. And I'm proud to say the governor signed that bill, and we're going to be able to help a lot more people with special needs. It's also my hope that the funds will, from this effort, will enable Liberty High School's Unified Sports Team and Byron Union's special needs students to have more opportunities to access recreational and educational programs. And here's one that I know will be of interest to the town council. AB 806, the Community Development Economic Development bill that I co-wrote with Assembly Member Bill Dodd. And this was signed into law, but it offers communities the opportunity to rehabilitate deteriorated areas, attract and retain jobs, improve local quality of life, and will strengthen the economic development powers of local governments by empowering cities and counties to create economic opportunities through the acquisition, sale, or lease of properties. But it will also boost rehabilitation of commercial buildings by offering loans to owners or tenants. This is a step towards redevelopment, again, folks. I was the mayor of the city of Oakland when Governor Brown rescinded, basically redeveloped. Governor Brown, turns out, I will be the first member to introduce legislation to reform the redevelopment communities in California, as I know it was a useful tool for everybody to create their own destiny. And that's a promise. So I know we're all in this room as Discovery Bay residents, and I'm here telling you I'm fighting for the Delta. I serve on the Delta Protection Commission. I have, what I think, the last 6 years. And I refer this district that I represent as the Delta District in the State Assembly. And I remain steadfast in my opposition to the governor's California Water Fix Plan. I've had hearings. I've had legislation, everything that I can do to throw bombs at that thing, that plan, going forward. I'm not here to allow something to screw up my Delta, my economy, and my way of life. I've lived in East County for the last 24 years. And what am I saying? 34 years, oh my gosh. Yeah. So. It's my drinking water, it's my water I play in, I hunt in, I fish in, as all of you know. So I will continue the battle going forward. But I'm glad that I was able to help bring $4 million to the Department of Polluting and Waterways I championed last year to be able to hire more staff and launch more boats to treat your aquatic invasive weeds. Although we can never eradicate these weeds, I am committed to working with you to help improve management efforts. Please know my office has been in communication with the State Water Resource Control Board and Contra Costa County Environmental Health about the blue-green algae here in Discovery Bay also. We, like you, are monitoring the situation and ready to offer assistance if needed. And I have, at the Delta Protection Commission, questioned the chief biologist about some of the processes that they're doing and maybe looking at other opportunities about how to control the blue-green algae. But as a member of the Delta Protection Commission, I also questioned the board chairman of the Metropolitan Water District last month and challenged the purchase of the Delta Islands. Having held the first oversight hearings of the BDCP funding structure and carried ME 2583, require added restrictions for conveyance proposed under the water fix. I've called joint legislative audit committees to take closer looks at this, so I'm continuing to fight that boondoggle of a plan. But I will look at alternative methods as a resort. I mean, everybody does need water, but this thing doesn't work. So once again, thank you for the opportunity to serve you. You know my door is always open, and it's always my pleasure to see you, so many of you, when I'm out and about in this district. I had the pleasure of being at Mr. Graves' event the other night to honor his son and many of the Gold Star families. And here I'm a member of your Chamber of Commerce. So So I look forward to being a good neighbor and come knock on my door if you need something right away. Look forward to working with you, looking for a long-term stay in Discovery Bay. Thank you.
Thank you. I have, being that, thanks for the update. So being that you ask, here's my, and I think the board concurs, we need a little assistance from Caltrans on cleanup. We don't even build anything. Just the mowers and the debris and stuff. And now that you're kind of arriving every day, and feel like you're probably noticing already, but along Highway 4, that's kind of our Discovery Bay's front door. We can handle the front entrance, so we need to do some painting and things like that. But our staff just can't get out on Highway 4 like Caltrans. So we can talk to them and see if we can get on some kind of, I don't know if a monthly maintenance or some kind of way that they're out here a little more frequently to kind of clean them up. We would certainly appreciate that.
Understood, and we do work on that capacity in Vacaville with some of the business owners there also. So, yeah, I rode my bike by there today and was like, what a mess. So
I guess you're not referring to the political signs, are you, Bill?
No, those will be gone immediately.
Oh, okay. All right. I just wanted to be clear on that.
Ten days after.
It's the litter. It's the stuff that's laying on the ground, not standing in the air.
Some of it's litter.
Simon Fraser, I'd like to thank you for it's welcome to Discovery Bay. It's great to have you around. Thank you for working diligently with regards to the big. I mean, we have a lot of issues. The roads are a huge issue. Obviously, paying more for fuel is not anything we're looking forward to. I wish there was an alternative way to make that happen. But what I really do appreciate is your concern about the Delta. And I you and I go way back, but things that will help the blue green algae, more water flow through the Delta. You know, I mean, we're losing so much water and they plan to take more, that those things are going to turn us just into a cesspool. So thank you for diligently working on that, and I would encourage you to involve us wherever we can be involved in that to be able to support that and to continue to put that as one of your priorities. Thank you for that.
Appreciate that. And just to share with you, gas tax will be sunsetting at some point. We will be moving into the vehicle miles traveled. There's a pilot program we're going on right now. Don't know how it's going to be. There's five different programs they're looking at, so everybody would be paying 30 cents per mile or whatever it is, however they format it. So this is just a bridge to get there. So
we'll talk later.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, this time we're going to go to committee liaison reports. Do we have the Planning Commission report for code enforcement?
It was a code enforcement meeting last week, and the good news is that Discovery Bay has very few items on that list, but they are following up with some parked motorhomes and fifth wheel trailers that are blocking sidewalks here on the road part of the street parking lot, as well as the house that burned down on the I believe. Working on some kind of a payment process for that burned down structure.
Okay. Was there any conversation at that meeting about short-term rentals in Discovery Bay?
Was anybody able to attend the special districts meeting? I was out of town. I'm going to be out of town. Thank you, Bob. Okay, with that, we'll go to the consent calendar. Do I hear a motion?
Yeah, I'll make the motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. We'll now move on to business and action items. We're going to go to G1. Consider authorizing interim city manager to sign a contract with Rudolph and Scalmini staff, please.
Thank you very much. The district's five-year capital improvement budget includes upgrades to what we call the PLC and the SCADA systems, the communication systems, which serve both our water treatment plants, the Little Lake treatment plant and the Newport treatment plant. And so review by the district's water engineers, Ludorf and Scalmanini, and by Veolia, the district's operator, concluded that the upgrade of the Willow Lake treatment plan should be done at this time, and that it was important to include the two associated wells along with that.
including the two associated wells, raises the budget from $250,000 to $290,000. This was reviewed by the district's Water and Wastewater Committee, which concurred with a conclusion that it was important to include those two wells as well. In conferring with Dina, the district's financial manager, the additional $40,000 can be handled by the district and will come from the Water Infrastructure Replacement Fund. So, Ludorf and Scalamini, there's a request to authorize me to enter into a contract with them in an amount not to exceed $75,000 for the engineering support for this project. If that's approved, they expect to finalize the bid package in November, solicit bids in December, and this will be a first quarter 2017 effort.
Thank you. Is there any public comments? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for discussion or
move staff recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll go to G2. Consider adoption resolution 20-16. Staff.
Thank you. In 2015, the board approved a resolution setting a benchmark for both HMO coverage as well as PPO coverage. And what a benchmark means, it is the amount that the district will contribute towards the healthcare cost. As we walked through and entered into what I consider to be a preferable process this year, we had an earlier enrollment in October to take advantage of some preferential healthcare rates. We were able to provide some additional options to the staff for healthcare coverage. And so all of the staff that previously were on the PPO plans migrated over and chose to go to the HMO plans. The challenge that creates for those staff members is if it was an equivalently priced plan as the PPO or a lower price, they would end up paying measurably higher because we used these two benchmarks. And so in looking at this, I'm recommending that we use a single benchmark coverage, and that benchmark be at the HealthNet HMO Gold A level. There will be no change in the district's previous decision that you would be paying 100% of the employee cost, and the employees would be responsible for paying a minimum of 20% of any dependent cost. There is no change in those. It is simply this going from two benchmarks to a single benchmark. To give you a sense as to the changes in health plan costs from last year to this year, they're relatively nominal. We had 10 employees covered last year at a town cost of about $116,000. We will have 11 employees covered this year at a cost of about $120,000. So they really were some preferential rates that we were able to take advantage of. So in order to go to that single benchmark, which I think is a very fair system for the staff, I've included that change in the attached resolution and request that you adopt that.
Any public comments? Seeing none, we'll come back to the board. Any discussion or comments?
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll go to item G3, talking about the community center road. Staff, please.
Thank you. Is Brian back from vacation?
Yes, I am.
Yep. Brian, do you want to talk about this or you want me to take it? I know it's your first day back from vacation.
You can take it if
there are any questions. Okay, boss. So we have two items, three and four. We'll first take three. Brian Miller, our Parks and Landscape Manager, has just been doing yeoman's work trying to get bids to replace the roof on this building, which is sorely needed. And as you remember, receiving the extra funds from PG&E, the board made a decision that replacing this roof was a priority. And so I believe the staff went out two times and received no bids. I think that is correct. And so made a decision to break them off into first is the removal, handling any asbestos issues, and the second is the reconstruction and adding the roof. And that was successful, not without a lot of effort on the part of staff. So the first item is to consider approving the issuance of a contract with Restec Contractors in the amount of $33,601 for the removal of the community center roof. I want to note that this includes obtaining all proper permits, air district asbestos notification fees and permits, consulting with Cal OSHA as required, as well as getting any county building permits that may be required, are all incorporated in this bid amount. So that's my recommendation, that you authorize us to go forward with this.
Okay, I have one question. Is the building itself will have to be closed for a few days? Do we know approximately how long the contractors are participating in?
Brian, is it about 1 week?
Yeah, at this time, we haven't got that far. We're waiting for approval. I'm guessing about 4 to 5 days at the very most.
Okay. Any public comments? Seeing none, we're back to the board.
How much of this is PG&E money?
100% of this will be PG&E money, but I do want to clarify something. When you add both G3 and G4 together, you had originally set aside $50,000 as part of the PG&E money, but this totals about $82,400. What we have done in working with a Park and Rec committee, because this was a higher priority, is make sure that we have not expended all of those funds, so there is sufficient money, and we will be working with the Park and Rec committee to reprioritize the remaining items.
Just so the residents know, we didn't take it out of their fund.
Yeah, it is PG&E funds.
Thank you. Okay, any other discussion?
Move approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we'll move on to item I-4, being that we've taken the roof off, we need to put one back on.
I have nothing else to add other than we need to put it back on. King's Roofing was the bidder for us after a long process, so I recommend that you move this item.
Any public comments? Okay, yes.
So if we decide not to accept this, we'll just have to move from the building.
Yeah, be open there. Okay, do I hear a motion?
Move staff recommendation.
Say.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Move to G6, accept the report from the manager on plat number one.
Well, if we could move to item number five first.
Oh, okay, sorry, I was didn't have a glass on. Okay, we will move to item number five, bond underwriting. Go ahead.
Thank you. So this has been a process that the district staff has spent a lot of time on, and I'd ask Dina to come up first and introduce this item, and we also have our financial advisor here as well.
She doesn't know you've got new speakers now.
Good evening. As you know, we've discussed many times before, the Town of Discovery Bay wastewater capital project includes the Title 22 filtration, which is a mandated project from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. This project needs to be completed no later than December 31st of 2017 and is estimated to be about $7.4 million. The decision was made to finance the project through enterprise bonds. The Finance Committee met on Thursday, September 29th at 6 p.m. to interview two potential bond underwriters. Each interview took about 45 to 60 minutes, where each firm presented themselves to the committee. Both firms, Stifel Nicholas and Company, Inc., and Brandis Talman, LLC, had extensive backgrounds and experience with bond underwriting, both with more than 30 years' experience. The firms presented bond market information, sales comparatives, costs, and estimated financing schedule that were complementary to the district's needs. The Finance Committee made the decision to move forward with Brandis Talman, LLC. What set Brandis Talman, LLC apart was their smaller boutique feel, their teamwork relationship between the partners, and the commitment and ability to assist and as well as educate district staff, not only through the bond process, but thereafter the deal was complete. It is recommended that the board authorize the general manager to enter into agreement with Brandis Talman LLC Bond Underwriter Services, authorizing the commencement of proceedings in connection with the execution and delivery of wastewater bonds.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Any public comments? Seeing none, I'll come back to the board for
I'll just make a comment. I want to commend staff and our consultant for bringing forward two very good bond underwriters for our consideration. Both of them were eminently qualified, they both presented well, and they made the committee's decision fairly difficult. But after, you know, discussion with staff and amongst the committee, we really support the contract with Breckman.
And I'd like to commend the committee for evaluating, a tough thing to evaluate, and the good job the committee did in working with our finance committee in order to coming up with this recommendation. And I would move staff recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we invited Saul Rosenbaum tonight from Prager & Company. He's our district's financial analyst. And so he's got a small presentation he'd like to present to you about bond financing.
Thank you, Dina. Thank you, everyone. It's my pleasure to be before you tonight. Hi.
How are you doing?
Very nice to see you again. Dina mentioned, my firm serves as the district's financial advisor. As the district's financial advisor, district-wide job means that we have a fiduciary duty to the district to place the interests of the district before our own and to provide competent and expert advice as it relates to the funding of the Title 22 filtration project. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about the process this far, but there are some things that I want to bring to your attention because there are some decisions that the district is going to need to make as it moves forward. In terms, just a word or two about the process this far, a request for proposal was prepared. The request for proposal for lenders and underwriters was distributed to approximately somewhere between 15 and 20 potential lenders and underwriters. How were those potential lenders and underwriters identified? We subscribed to a national database that indicates which lenders over the last 3 years have been active in California with special districts with water and wastewater enterprise types of financings. From that information, we were able to narrow down the universe to 15 or 20. We received, I believe, four responses, two from banks and two from underwriters. And from that, two were selected for further interviewing at the district, which occurred last Thursday night. And Indiana and director referred to. So, while I don't think that any decision needs to be made, I don't think you're being asked to make any decisions tonight with respect to what's being presented before you. It's something that is for your consideration and to think about as we move forward. Since I don't have a pointer, or do I have a pointer?
It probably doesn't work on the TV.
No.
Oh, okay. So this is what I want to, this is a lot of information here, but the gray represents the district's existing wastewater enterprise loan obligation of approximately $750,000 a year. So currently, in 2012, the district incurred debt, the majority of which was for wastewater fund improvements, a minority of it was for water enterprise fund improvements, and the annual payment on that debt is roughly $750,000 a year. So the question for the district now is how to amortize the proposed debt, the proposed approximately $7.5 million of Title 22 filtration debt, how to combine that with what's already outstanding. And there are roughly two ways. You can structure the proposed $7.5 million debt so that you have level annual debt service on just that piece each and every year. And this is what the top depicts. You can see that the red and the blue depict the debt service on the proposed $7.5 million.
And you can see it's level, 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 level. And then when the Series 2012 bonds go away, it's level, level, level. Another alternative to consider is what we call wrapping the proposed debt for the Title 22 filtration around the existing debt. This is existing debt. This would be wrapping around. This is going to have a 30-year amortization. There are pros and cons to both approaches. One consideration with respect to wrapping the debt is that we are in a historically low interest rate environment right now, and so placing more principal out, amortizing more principal out long could be advantageous, particularly if over the next 5 or 10 years the district believes that it may have the need to access the tax-exempt capital markets for more debt at a time when the interest rate environment might be higher. Since you're placing, with the wrap scenario, since you're placing principal out long, if in the next 5 years or so the district has a need to incur additional debt related to the wastewater enterprise fund, it can then place principal maturities at a shorter term out, and the shorter term out is going to have lower interest rates. So these are some, these are not intuitive considerations, but they're important nonetheless, and particularly for those of you that are have more financial experience and can help to guide and direct the others, this is important information. At the top, what we see here is the proposed debt is going to result in approximately $413,000 a year of debt service. If it's wrapped around your existing debt, then as a budgetary matter, you're going to be looking at $365,000 of debt service until 2042. And then starting in 2043, it increases to $1,000,001. We're estimating an all-in cost of funds for what we call a standalone level debt service scenario to be roughly 3.71% for a 30-year fixed rate loan. If it is wrapped, it'll be the true interest cost or the all-in cost of funds will be roughly 3.91%. There's one other consideration for you tonight, and that is tax-exempt fixed-rate debt is usually accompanied by a provision that allows the borrower, or the district in this case, to redeem or call the debt early. A standard redemption provision is roughly 10 years at par, which means that in 10 years the district can repay the debt without any sort of repayment or prepayment penalty. The question that we were asked to consider is how much would it cost if the district were to create a provision in the loan document that had allowed it to call the bonds away, the debt from the investors earlier than 10 years. So here's the result. On a standalone level debt service basis, a standard call provision is going to result in annual debt service of $413,000. The ability to call the bonds in 5 years versus 10 years is going to result in an annual debt service of a little over $30,000 a year more. So a true interest cost of 3.71 to 4.37. If the proposed debt is wrapped around the 2012 bonds, a standard call provision is going to result in a true interest cost of 3.91, and having the ability to redeem the bonds early, much earlier, in 5 years, would be 4.49. An extraordinary redemption provision is a non-standard feature. However, if the district believes that it might be coming into significant developer fees or connection fees, what have you, in the next few years, and wants to have an opportunity to pay down debt sooner than it would otherwise have. This is a feature that can be introduced into the finance. So that's really that's my presentation. These are the two elements that I'd like you to consider in the ensuing days and weeks. And I realize again that this is not intuitive. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
So at what point in the process would we have to be facing that decision?
Well, I'm sorry. That's a good question. So that leads into the timing. Thank you. And so it's our understanding that the district would like the tax exempt debt funding to close at the end of January. That decision would need to be made. I would say you have a good 6 weeks at least to make that decision. By the time the underwriter gets ready to market the bonds to potential investors, they need to know when they're having discussions with investors, what kind of expectations to set up with the investors about the early redemption provision.
Okay. Yeah. Good question. Bob, thanks.
All right. Yeah, we're pretty much okay. So there's no decision today. We're just full of information, and you look out that chart, 2043 looks like a long time.
Yeah.
It'll be here before we know it. Okay.
Thank you very much, Saul. And Dina, if I could just add one more thing. Dina has been doing a lot of work working with Saul on a daily basis to get all this materials together, and we'll have a lot of work ahead of Dina and her large amount of staff Dina and Juan, all the way through January. So it's going to be just a lot of work ahead of us, but she's done a lot of great work to get us where we are today, and thank you, Saul, as well.
If staff hasn't thought about it, because this is such an important issue, the financing, and we are committing the district for a long time, and I don't believe any of us will be on the board when towards the end of that. Maybe Director Gray, they might suggest we have a workshop setting so that we could kind of take a look at new housing units, potential coming in, and so we can help us make that decision whether we want to have an opportunity to call the bond sooner or not.
Okay, we can do that.
A Saturday or early before a meeting or something like that.
Maybe before an hour and a half or so before a meeting, we could do that. Maybe in November or December, we'll work on that.
Well, in advance of the time we need to meet.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, managers. We've got one more. G6. We need to accept the report from interim's general manager.
Thank you. So I hope that this is what's considered a good news report. And this is the results of what I would call the Plant 1-Plant 2 analysis. And as you know, just as background, the district has a wastewater treatment master plan that was finalized in 2013. You've done two amendments to that, and the key issue, the key point of a master plan is, and these are my words, it really is the district's roadmap for capital needs and expenditures. What are we going to need, what are we going to spend, and make sure we have all of the right facilities in place when we need them. Not too early. If they're put in too early, then by the time you need it, half of the life might be gone, but you certainly don't want them in too late. And so as part of the budgeting process this last year, so we're talking about last spring shortly after I came, there was the inclusion of $1.5 million in the capital budget for improvements to plant number one. And so the board then asked the question, of should the district continue to invest capital in plant one, knowing that it was $1.5 million on the budget, or should plant one facilities be moved to plant two, and should plant one be repurposed for some other use? And so the district last spring engaged Stantec who is the firm that prepared the master plan, and they looked at three analyses. Alternative to rehabilitate the facilities, including the clarifiers, or to just replace all of the facilities at Plant 2. And here were the results that we had again later on in the springtime. Alternative one, which was the recommendation of Stantec, would be about a $4 million expenditure. Alternative two, about $7 million. And the moving of everything to plant number two, a very expensive, almost $14 million. And then those again raised the question about, except for what I'll call, and Bernie's in the audience, which is good, you can correct me if I'm using the wrong terminology, except for the influent, all of the sewer goes right into plant number one, the remainder of the plant has not been utilized since before I came, which was February. It stopped being utilized in January, and all flows have been treated at plant two. And so the question I think that the board asked and the staff was asking is the capacity of plant one needed? And key, and I may not have written that as well as I could have, is the key, a driver for the district should be, do we have sufficient redundancy? Do we have the backup supplies that are needed and appropriate? And so I reached out to some other wastewater districts and got the recommendation for a peer review engineer that we had give us some assistance. And here's some information through that process. At the end of the process, I gathered up who I will call our team. And our team is Herwitt Engineering, Bernie from Veolia, who is our operator, Virgil, who's our water and wastewater manager, myself, and then as well as Vivian Hausen from Hausen Engineering, who was the peer reviewer. And here are just some facts. Our plant two capacity is at 1.58 million gallons per day, and that's the average annual flow in the winter. 2.43 in the summer, and Bernie can tell you why there is the difference. It's something about the bugs like to eat things up, and they don't. Things work better in one season than the other because of heat or cold, and he can answer those questions. What I should note is when we say capacity is, that's the capacity, it's called firm capacity, which is the industry standard. When I had talked to Stantec back in March, it said, how do you determine redundancy? He said, you take one clarifier out, and that is how you determine capacity. So these are numbers with one clarifier, and Bernie, a clarifier is about 750,000 gallons, is that right?
About 800,000.
So with all of the capacity that you have just at plant two, so with nothing out of service, that number 1.58 would instead be 1.89, almost 1.9. Your number that's 2.43 would then be 2.86. And remember, you look down below our permit, we are limited, we can't pump more than 2.37. Now when we combine them all together, and again, this is firm capacity, so you take one clarifier out, we combine plant one and plant two, it's at 2.61 in the winter, 3.98 in the summer. And here's where it gets interesting. If you look down to what are our flows, our average flows have been 1.3 million gallons per day. That has been the district's experience since 2012. So we are now on year five. And when I asked for information related to our reporting to the state, this is all based on reporting that we do to the state, the information that's filed with the state, those numbers are actually trending down. They're not trending up. They started at about 1.4. They're trending down, and I believe this year we think that we are going to end up at about 1.1. 1.1 or 1.2. So we have a little bit of depression. So when we gathered the group together, as you can imagine, there was all kinds of discussion about our master plan is up here, but our experience is down here. And the master plan was based on historic flows, 2007, 2008, 2009. You know, the draft of the report that I found was 2011. So it's going to be based on some years before that. It was finalized, I think, in 2013. So it was historic flows of what the district had. So there was all kinds of great discussion about how could it drop. And there were some really good reasons for why it could drop. Some groundwater intrusions into the, you know, water moving into the sewer system, some leaks that the district caught, whether the equipment was calibrated properly or not. There were reasons to bring it down. Were there reasons that it would come back up? Not at that level of a jump, but there was all kinds of reasons. We talked about demographics. We talked about whether, how much could the district expand. We are relatively built out in this community. And as you know, we are surrounded by an urban limit line. And should there be a change in, from agricultural land where something is converted, it will probably be on the nature of 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 houses. And because it would require a general plan amendment, lots of land use entitlements, it would take 3-4 years to go through that process through the county's process. So nothing is going to pop back up. So we are now trending down, depressing a little bit. Maybe if you add up all the potential residential units that might be added, we might go up about 9%. So that 1.1 might pop up, or 1.2 might go up to 1.4, maybe 1.5. So interesting information. So the group, as a result of this, and I will say these were unanimous conclusions, and I have a couple that I added on my own at the end, so I won't speak for other people, but this was the group. So the first one is that Plant One should not be abandoned. It's an important asset. The land is an important asset for the district, and it should not be repurposed. And it should remain as a part of the district's wastewater facilities for a couple of good reasons. One, it's sort of an insurance policy for you. There's extra insurance there. The facility is there and it's built. But then here comes the second item with, what kind of improvements do you have to do to that in order to be the insurance policy? That's a different level of improvement than if you were building it to provide primary. Because remember, from all of the data that we have, Plant 2 is sufficient, and Plant 2 is sufficient with clarifiers off. And Plant 2 can be sufficient for a period of a time with an oxidation ditch off. So this is really, you have the facility, it's an emergency backup. Well, perhaps you watch and get 2 or 3 more years of data, and you watch as the build out occurs, and give yourself a little more time before you make those kinds of decisions. So recommendation number 2 is that the proposed $4 million expenditure to rehabilitate Plant 1 that was originally recommended is not necessary. But needed repairs should be done, but those repairs we believe can be done for about $750,000. And that is our repairs, understanding that Plant 1 is really an insurance policy, it's a backup for you. So we estimate that to be about $750,000. We'll need to do more ground truthing on that and bring the specific items back through the Water and Wastewater Committee and bring those details back. Recommendation number 3, and this is what's interesting. The oxidation ditch at Plant 1, this is another reason to hold on to this asset, provides the district with an alternative that was raised in this meeting by Herwitt Engineering. And that is, as you know, you've listened to Saul and to Dina talk about the debt that the district was going to need, the existing debt from the $14.5 million bond issuance in 2012, the additional debt for this new project, and then on the horizon, we've talked about the denitrification project that I have heard was talked about as $8.5 million project. It was on the horizon, beyond our rate study, but an important project to know about. Well, through this process, since we have an extra oxidation ditch, there's an alternative, achieving denitrification by building the denitrification within the oxidation ditch. That will reduce the capacity by 15, 20, some 25%. But since you have that extra capacity, that's an alternative for you. If you do that, the estimate is that your project will be down in the neighborhood of $2 million rather than up in the neighborhood of $8 million, which when you talk about something, and I talked to Dina, if she's dealing with a $2 million expenditure, she's smiling. You're five, you're six, and you're seven. These are things that we can plan for, include within the rate study, may not need to be doing extra financing. Item number four. Now this is where these are my last two. I think I have four and five. My last two recommendations. One, the wastewater flows that have been experienced by the district are measurably different from historic flows. And we can spend all kinds of time trying to figure out why are they lower, but they are lower from 2012, 13, 14, 15, and now 16. That's where they are. And capacity is based on expectations of wastewater flows. So if your master plan is up here, and that's your roadmap for capital expenditures, but our reality is down here, really what we need to do is to annually evaluate our flows and make sure that that information comes to the board so that needed and planned facilities, the facilities that we need are planned for and we know when they are needed. And we're able to make those adjustments and you're able to see this information on an annual basis. Second, as I said, the master plans are a guiding document. This really is an indication that you don't need to do it this year, you don't really need to do it next year, but within the next couple of years, you should look at conducting a master plan update. You will then have, at the end of this year, year five, you could get yourself another year, you will have an awful lot of data. As I said, it's not something that needs to be done today. You can certainly watch capital expenditures and make sure it's needed for what we're experiencing today, but really the indications are is that you should be updating your master plan. So the good news that I would say is on savings here is from the original recommendation, there is $3 million during the next two fiscal years. Dina has said when I talked to her about even if the needed repairs for the emergency backup status at Plant 1 are needed, and as I say, universally recommended by all parties in the room, they were all comfortable with it, even if that comes up to $1 million over 2 years, she expressed confidence that that can be handled by the district's wastewater infrastructure fund. Am I saying that? Good. Perfect. And she smiles with that. We're okay with that. Secondly, there is this important potential that the district should give a significant evaluation to that with retaining Plant 1 and this oxidation ditch, there is the thought by the parties in the room that we may be able to carry out that next big project at a cost of more like $2 million rather than a cost of $8 million. And I think that is a, as I say, that's a $9 million savings presentation for you. So there you are.
Thank you very much. It's always nice when you have the potential to save money. Go ahead.
Yeah, my only comment on this is that none of this ever came to the Water Wastewater Committee for discussion, and that's what our purpose is, and I'm a little concerned, and we've showed tremendous interest in these evaluations, and I would encourage staff in the future to include that committee in these reports prior to it coming to the board so that the board can have some input at that level. And my understanding also is that originally it was well, I'll talk to you about it later.
Okay. Yeah, and I did. I heard from the board at the last meeting of the desire to get this item, and we just met last week. I think it was last Thursday, so we met. The desire to get this item up and done, and so I did make that decision to move it right to the board, and I agree this will need to come back, go in much detail through the Water and Wastewater Committee, so agree.
I think the other thing that needs to be discussed here, and at a later date it should be on an agenda, we have basically an in-house engineer in Herwood. We pay him $500,000 a year, and we've never once, ever, that I remember in years I've been on this board, asked for a second opinion. They should have bought this. If an engineer from Iron House bought this, our engineer should have bought it. And I have a problem with that. I brought this up 3 years ago to your predecessor and I asked him, why are we not going out? Why is there never a second opinion? And it was sold, it just got blown off and it stopped. We need to look at this. This needs to be an agenda item. It needs to be talked about. Any other questions?
Thanks for the update and awareness.
It's a great presentation, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any public comment? Seeing none, we need a motion to accept, okay, that's nothing necessary there.
Oh, I'm sorry, I had a number of recommended items that you will see in there that I went over with your recommendations, they are bulleted, but they were 1 through 5, and we will bring this information back through the Water and Wastewater Committee as well.
Thank you. Okay, item H, managers' reports. Any manager reports this evening? None. We'll go to informational items. I don't think we have any there. President's report. I have nothing to report. Any directors have something to report?
Giants were hit 3-0 in the ninth inning.
Thank you.
Is that what you had to ask?
General manager's report.
None. That was it.
District legal.
Nothing for me. Just to remind you, though, that you will be adjourning this meeting and reconvening into the special meeting previously not concluded.
Thank you. Any subcommittee updates? I don't see any correspondence. We've got the public question. Any future agenda items?
Not at this point.
Do I hear a motion to adjourn to our closed session?
Motion.
Second, we're adjourned to close session. Thank you.